Are we just doing movies then?
Yeah, just movies.
Oh, okay.
Oh, but there's a lot of TV shows that are pretty bad,
like
kind of good.
Stuff.
We could come back and do this again for TV.
Oh, I see.
That this is the benefit of a serial format. Heck, we could even tease the TV one in this episode and be like, oh, that's awesome. I will subscribe to the feed and wait patiently for it to show up. And welcome to I Thought They Smelled Bad on the Outside, a show that contains no artificial colors or flavors, preservative-free for your health. And with me tonight are some fine folks. It's kind of a full house. Introduce yourself.
No!
Chrissy,
that's Sam's job. You have... She's only allowed to do that. You have to introduce yourselves. I will not put up with this shit from anyone else.
I'm terrified because I've eaten so much fast food and other sort of, you know, modern constructed dietary supplements. I don't think your claim of preservative free really counts with me. I'm pretty sure after I die, my body will stay as good as a Twinkie will. Anyway, hi, I'm David.
I'm Chrissy.
Oh, now we're all introducing at once. All right.
What the hell?
I don't know. I'm playing Pokemon.
And I'm Dylan.
I'm Chrissy.
And I'm Scott. And this is more people than I'm used to. We're going to talk over each other a lot.
I'm noticing that the logistics are not quite up to par.
No. But you know what? We'll still sound better than the most recent podcast.
That's fair.
Of course, by the time this drops, it'll be a less recent one. But I'll link to the exact one I mean, so you can be like, wow. That episode was lame.
Which one?
Anyhow.
The most recent one, the John Boat Contingency?
Yeah, yes, the John Boat Contingency.
Oh, I dearly loved that episode because they didn't talk about any of that crap RPG stuff.
Like this show.
Exactly.
Actually, the one time we talked about RPGs is still my least popular episode.
Nobody likes those RPG things.
Yeah, no. Certainly not.
No. Not like a unifying factor in most of the online friendships we've created.
Nope, not at all. Yeah. But anyway, bit of business. We still have a contest going on. Just rate us on iTunes. Email me to say you did it. You win. You could win $5.
What?
So far, we have no entries, so your odds are looking pretty good.
Wait, is that $5 cash or $5 Canadian Tire money?
Oh, jeez.
Cash. Although, if you wanted Canadian Tire money... Actually, I couldn't get that much Canadian Tire money that fast. They only give you, like, you know, 10% of your purchase back that way. I'd have to spend, like, $500 at Canadian Tire to get that much Canadian Tire money.
I know a guy who bought a riding mower with Canadian Tire money. Pretty sweet.
That's dedication.
I once bribed a guy with Canadian Tire money. It was dark. It was a big effing roll. I think I only lost like $2.
Okay, so the theme today...
Pick of the week.
Oh, pick of the week first. Okay.
Pick of the week. Who wants to lead off?
You.
I always go last. That's the rule.
Okay. All right, host. I'll go first because I actually got something really nice this week. I got Twin Peaks. I have just started watching through Twin Peaks, and it is fantastic. It is phenomenal. It is exceptional. It is streaming on Netflix, which kind of makes the purchase of the DVDs a bad move in retrospect. But it's fantastic, and I can't believe I haven't seen it before.
I mean, dancing midgets, man. Dancing midgets.
Yeah. And giants. And giants. Let's not forget the giant contingency. But oh my god, like I've never seen a show this, I don't want to say artistic because that's a really pretentious way of saying it, but it knows what it's doing. Like nowadays we have Lost and I don't know, Alias or Heroes, or I haven't really watched TV since 2004. So, but we have all these shows that all sort of center around sort of these mystery plots that really we're not looking to see them concluded. And when they are concluded, we're let down because we've built up this mystery in our minds. But I feel like Twin Peaks did it first and best. It's tackling, like, the cinematography is just so gorgeous, and the characters are just so bizarre. And, I don't know, there's just something delightful about seeing Charlotte. Is it Charlotte's husband who plays the FBI agent?
I think so.
Yeah, it's Kyle MacLachlan, also yeah. Or McClan, or McClanahan. Paul Atreides. just his utterly bizarre investigation methods. I read online on those internets where they have the facts that there was going to be a crossover between Twin Peaks and X-Files at some point, that the writers were trying to on X-Files were trying to make that happen, and I wish that it had, because I would kill to see those two, Mulder and what's his name?
Cooper?
Dale Cooper. Mulder and Cooper in the same room for just 10 minutes. Just 10 minutes of them staring at each other. They wouldn't even have to say anything. Just sort of stare. Like, I would love that.
All right. Anyone want to follow that?
I watched only two movies last week. One of them was like, not that great. And the other one, I honestly don't know what to think of it yet, so I'm going to make it my pick of the week. It was called A Boy and His Dog. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's totally out there, really messed up. But I believe that it has it really okay. So the story of this movie is that it came out back in the late 70s. It's a post-apocalyptic fiction. It's pretty brutal, and I think it really influenced the Fallout series a lot, because there's a lot of little hints dropped. But anyway, at an hour into the movie, it completely falls apart and goes bizarre, and it's just got an ending that I don't think has ever been topped. So I don't want to get into it too much, because you could talk about this movie for hours.
Yeah, that was written by Harlan Ellison, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. It was originally a book. The movie was surrounded in a lot of controversy, and after watching it, I can see why. You know, unlike other movies that I've seen about post-apocalypse, this one, I think. Much aside from after where it falls apart, before that, the first two-thirds of the movie is probably one of the most accurate depictions of society post-bomb. It's pretty bizarre.
Cool.
My pick of the week would be it's a book I'm reading right now called Reality is Broken, and it's just talking about how we could use what we've learned about games, like so video games and other games, to improve the real world. And I don't know, it's really interesting. I like that it talks about World of Warcraft in an academic way. It makes me laugh. And it's made me think about things about like what I like about video games.
Oh, cool. That's about gamification, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I heard that mentioned on Extra Credits. Have you seen that web series?
Yeah, the Extra Credit guys are just freaking genius at about everything.
Yeah. Ooh, there's a new episode up about metrics. Exciting.
Yep. They think metrics might be a bad idea.
But yeah, no, gamification is awesome. When I was getting my senior film done, I downloaded this to-do list on my iPhone called Epic Win. Have you guys ever seen this?
I do not buy iDevices.
Aren't you special?
Yes, I am special. I'm special in that I ignore so many trends.
Epic Win is a to-do list crossed with an RPG, and so it treats each one of your to-do items like an actual quest in a role-playing game, and you have like a little player character, and you can assign various stats to improve alongside your to-do list. So like, say, I don't know, chopping firewood, because I come from, the deep Midwest. chopping firewood, you could assign that to be your strength, or reading some pages for your studying some pages for a test could be increase your intellect. And so, as you complete quests over time, gives you experience and it levels up your character. So cool armor pops up on their body and it moves them along this little path. And you collect wacky items. It's really neat and it actually was really effective as an incentive. So towards the end, when I started lagging and I just couldn't focus anymore, just having like that little incentive of, all right, if I just render out one more shot, then I get a cool new broadsword. Really, really helped.
Yeah, but wouldn't that just lead to you making up really pointless things you could tick off fast just for the sake of XP? You know, eat lunch.
No.
Put on socks.
I thought about that, but that would be really lame, so no. Going back to gamification, have you guys heard about what they're doing in, I think it's Sweden, with traffic tickets?
Is that the Volkswagen rethinking things where they, like, it's a lottery where
I did see that.
Yeah, and if you're going below the speed limit or at the speed limit, they take a picture of your license plate and you get entered into a lottery and you can win the pot of everyone who's speeding, they pay their ticket.
Huh.
And then you, like, win the pot.
Yeah. And then they have another thing for parking tickets where if you get a scratch and win on the back of it, and if you win, you don't have to pay the ticket.
Yeah, it's good to see some implementation of positive reinforcement instead of just punishment all the time.
But yeah, that's all part of that gamification that's in that Reality is Broken thing. Because what people are figuring out is that people, more than people dislike being penalized, people love to win. And so if you can just tap into that desire for winning, cue Charlie Sheen joke, then you can really do some really great things.
All right, and my pick of the week is going to The Heroes. It's a novel by Joe Abercrombie. He's pretty awesome. It's like 500 pages long, and it covers 3 days of a all-out war between these two giant armies and just all these guys mixed up in it, and it's a lot of it is characters from his four previous novels mixed up in all this, so it's sort of like skipping all the lead up of the epic fantasy and just getting right down to the nitty gritty, and it most certainly gets very gritty. A lot of fun. Heartily recommended. And on to our main topic, which is movies that we consider to be so bad it's good. We're gonna throw out a few recommendations out there and talk a bit about the right sort of movie to look for when you want to riff on something. Maybe a little tribute to Mystery Science Theater at the end. We'll see how this goes. But does anyone want to start by throwing out a movie of this type?
I can start us off. I think I'd first like to give a little shout out to one of my favorite movies of all time that, is almost indisputably in the category here. Has anybody heard of Yor, Hunter of the Future?
Yor's World, he's the man.
He's the man. Oh, yeah. It's just absolutely brilliant. The thing is, like, most movies you watch, I actually believe there is, one of Spoonie Experiment's movies he's reviewed online, so if you want to hear his riff track, you can check it out there. Yeah, I actually, got the VHS tape and everything. It's a movie that it starts off, Neanderthal. By the end of it, it's like Star Wars. It just looks like they took random set pieces and thought, how can we work this into our movie? The guy who's Yor is just so incredibly brutally manly. It's just intense. It's a nonstop thrill ride. But, even though its budget is probably, like $10 and some chips if you take part or something.
Yeah. Well, that's another thing I suppose we should mention is that there are some actors and certain directors that you can just point at and know you're going to get a movie that's perfect for sort of making fun of as you watch it. And Reb Brown is just a great indicator of that from, you know, the classic space mutiny.
Slab, bulkhead.
Blast, hard cheese.
Big, make large, huge.
Bob Johnson.
Wait, what?
Wait. what I love about that, I love that people use those names on the internet. Like, there are tons of people who go by, who use those as forum handles. Like, awesome. I once had a month-long debate with a guy named Rip Steakface.
Fantastic.
I thought you were talking about Bob Johnson, because Pokemon game, that's what I named my my legendary ice dragon. Bob Johnson.
Wait, there's not enough spaces in the Pokemon name thing to name something Bob Johnson.
There is now. Lie. In Pokemon Black, there's just enough for Bob Johnson.
Wow. Could you also do it?
I think the developers had that in mind.
I'm sending something your guys' way. You should check out this poster. By the way, on the subject of your Le Chassier du Futur.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Only in English.
Yes. The fun thing to know is that, like, one thing I actually want to track down is that Your 100th from the Future is a cut-down version of it. There exists, like, a four-part mini-series version of this thing.
Oh, my God.
No.
And it was based on a Spanish comic book. So, that's two things I gotta find.
Whoa.
You know what other, bad but good movie was based on a comic book, eh? Or, like, a short old book? The Warriors.
Oh, that movie's not even bad. That movie's just weird.
Well, it's weird. It looks pretty low budget. There are parts of it that are honestly pretty bad. You know, their effects budget must have been pretty low. But, it kind of brings up that whole, issue. When we say so bad it's good, are we talking about, cult movies? Or, what makes a movie good and bad in this regard?
Well, all right. Tricky. I think this is a perfect segue for my little soapbox, which is that I don't believe that there is such a thing as a so bad it's good film. I mean, after all, what we're saying with so bad it's good is just that we like it. We're just ashamed of admitting publicly that we like something. So we qualify it by saying it's bad. But then we come in right at the end and we go, that's really good. I think that as long as you get enjoyment out of something, it's good. Like, I'm not saying that things can't be cheesy and you can't enjoy their obvious failings. I think a little schadenfreude in our entertainment is necessary. But I think that if you really, truly do like your Hunter from the Future, then it's a good film.
There's a difference between... There's some people who definitely say, who can't admit that they have guilty pleasures in their viewing, but there are certain things that I know are terrible, and I enjoy their terribleness. Like, I am not I enjoy the fact that they're so bad. It's not that, it's like, I'm enjoying the movie in spite of the movie, in a way.
Is that kind of like going to see the Twilight movies in theaters? And then...
No.
Kind of giggling here and there.
See, no, I just look at the lines for Twilight movies and I laugh at the 60-year-old boys who got dragged to this hoping to get makeouts later. I laugh at them.
Oh, you want to laugh at somebody? Laugh at me. I went with my mom because we just thought it was going to be about a bunch of sexy vampires. And we're huge Buffy fans. You're like, all right, a movie of all spikes? This sounds great. It was,
and then none of them were Spike.
It would.
Instead, you get vampire baseball.
The vampires played,
I'm sorry, but,
baseball.
The best line in that entire film is just when he's looking around in that cafe and he says, "I can read his mind, and I can read his mind, and I can see all of their thoughts, but with you, nothing."
There's a reason,
dude. That might not be a good thing.
Like, it's absolutely terrible writing, pretty bad cinematography, but God help me if I had a great experience watching it. I was laughing all the way.
Well, I only watched those with the benefit of two serious enjoyment enhancing drugs, Kevin Murphy and Jack Daniels. Like, screw this Bob-Joel, Joel-Mike rivalry. It's all about Kevin Murphy.
Who Kevin is Murphy. Kevin Murphy?
He was the voice of Crow?
No, he was the voice of Tom Servo.
Oh, Tom Servo, right, yeah. Bill Corbett was
Crow. Oh, okay,
Crow.
Yeah. Sorry, when you said Crow, I thought you were talking about, like, that, you know, It Can't Rain All the Time. You know that movie? I was thinking, like...
Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Okay, I'm sorry. Now, there's nothing bad about Crow. That's genius, that movie. It's wonderful.
I'm going to lead off with one of my favorites. It came out in, like, early 80s from the Roger Corman studio, that little factory of schlock, called Star Crash. Now Star Crash is the Star Wars knockoff to end all Star Wars knockoffs.
Even more than Turkish Star Wars?
See, Turkish Star Wars, that's bad, but this is hilarious. Because you know what Turkish Star Wars doesn't have? David Hasselhoff. David Hasselhoff gets in a lightsaber fight with two robots.
They shouldn't have hassled Hoff.
That's right. And then his dad, played by Christopher Plummer, the whole planet's about to explode, and he beams down to the planet. It's like, we gotta get out of here, it's gonna explode. And you know what he says with the most utmost gravitas and straight face? Imperial capital ship, halt the flow of time.
What?
Yes. Apparently, the Empire just has the power to stop time. And then there's the climax of the movie where fighters just fly at the evil fist-shaped death station of the evil Count Zarthorn, and it launches torpedoes through the windows, and then the window, there's no decompression for some reason, and the torpedoes don't explode, because you know what's in the torpedoes? Dudes! Just two guys hop out of every torpedo, and they get in a huge firefight with all of Zarthorn's dudes, and then the main character, and Hasselhoff, they hop in their ship, and then they blow up the station, and Zarthorn just dies screaming his own name over and over. And there's this robot, and he apparently can do everything except maintain an accent for more than one line of dialogue, because he goes back and forth between Southern and Australian for some reason. And there was a whole planet full of Amazons that wanted them dead. It is a messed up movie. And hilarious.
Oh, exceptional.
Like, David Hasselhoff, another good indicator of a movie that's going to be hilarious no matter what. I mean, he was Nick Fury. Anyone remember the David Hasselhoff, Nick Fury movie?
No.
No.
It wasn't as good as either of any of the previous attempts at a Captain America movie, but it was up there.
You know, Scott, I think you have very suspect taste.
You figure?
Just a little bit.
Just a bit. Okay, Chrissy, you want to throw out a suggestion?
Yeah, okay. So depending on where you're looking, this movie could be called one of two things. It could be called Invasion, or it could be called Top of the Food Chain. And it was made in, I think it was 1999. It has Tom Everett Scott. And it's about this little isolated Canadian town where, like, their factory is closed down and then TV stops broadcasting and then people start dying horribly. So it's got, like, all the bits that make it awesome in that it's an isolated Canadian town and yet they have an atomic scientist.
Dylan, you're an atomic scientist in an isolated town in Canada, right?
Yeah. So it's riffing on 50s alien movies. And, it's just, like, some of the lines in it are just, beauty. They're gems. Like, an atomic scientist's life can be very lonely. There aren't many atomic lady scientists, after all. And we found the remains of a dead human corpse, deceased, in the hilly, lumpy, bumpy part of town, outside of town.
Translated through three languages before it was filmed?
They filmed it in Kaladin. Like, it's just... They don't take themselves seriously at all, yet the characters take themselves really seriously. And it's just... wacky. And there's total Deus Ex Machina at the end, where, like, everything gets fixed and it's really good. And everybody's happy at the end. It's like, yay, we had aliens killing people, but now we're all happy. Yeah. And the atomic scientist is working on cool fusion.
Not cold, just cool.
Cool. But yeah, it's a great movie, and it's just, it doesn't take itself seriously at all. Like, it's this giant eye wink at the audience. But it's also, like, really cheesy. Like, really, really cheesy, which is why it's so good.
See, this is really difficult, because I just enjoy the things I enjoy, as per my... I think that if I was going to choose something that was awful, that I legitimately find delightful... Well, honestly, what I find it awful that I really find enjoyable is I watch a lot of Japanese children live-action TV shows. Those are all delightful with their rubber suits and their punching. But I think staying in Canada, because that's what all the rest of you guys do. Anyway,
yep.
The movie Fido. Have you guys seen that?
No, I still want to see that, though.
Oh, I think it would make an excellent double bill with your film. Because it is about, it's a parody of 50s, not even 50s horror, but just sort of 50s sitcoms, but set post-zombie apocalypse, after humanity has sort of won the day, but the zombie scourge still lingers. And so, since there's a whole bunch of undead sort of wandering around, you got two options. You either, you know, chop off the head or destroy the brain, or... they've invented these little shock collars that can be used to turn a zombie into a helpful, productive member of society. And so you have, like, zombie security guards at the local school, the zombie postman who just sort of aimlessly chucks mail sort of in the direction of houses. Some people have, like, zombie manservants who follow after them carrying their groceries, that sort of thing. So it's set in 50s America, you know, everything is like, gee, Jimmy, how was your day? Oh, it was pretty good, Pop. And it's adorable. But the setup is that, I forget the characters' names. It's been so long since I've seen it. Let me just do a quick Wikipedia. All right.
Was it intended to be a comedy?
Oh, yeah, it's intended to be a comedy. And so little Timmy... is the only kid on his block that doesn't have a zombie, because his dad has a zombie phobia, and he's terrified of them. But finally, one day his mom Helen buys a zombie because she's tired of being the laughingstock of the lady's social, and Timmy befriends him and names him Fido. And so the movie is part zombie horror, part 50s sitcom, and part Lassie, where Lassie is an undead it's an undead Billy Connolly as the zombie Fido. And so it's adorable, because, like, Timmy and Fido will be out playing catch, and then Fido's collar will go haywire, and then he'll murder and eat the kindly old lady next door, and then Timmy will walk up to Fido and say, "Oh, Fido, why'd you go and do that?" It's adorable. It's fantastic. You guys have to see it.
All right. I'll add it to the list. But I've got one. Keeping in the Made in Canada theme, I guess, that we've got running is Jesus Christ Vampire Hunter.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Here's the plot. The lesbians of Ottawa are being preyed upon by a supernatural menace. The Catholic Church, having no one else to turn to, gets Jesus, who's just been hanging out on a beach for the past 2,000 years, to come solve their problem. At which point, Jesus quickly realizes he's outnumbered by all these vampires who can now walk in the daylight thanks to skin grafts. And as for the help, of a Mexican wrestler.
Santo.
El Santo.
Nice.
At which point, they engage in some of the longest, most gratuitous vampire slaying fight scenes ever.
Jesus.
Also, all in between scenes, they do like the spinning Batman logo thing, but with Jesus. It's shot on 16mm film, so it ends up being this pseudo like 1970s grindhouse parody, pastiche type thing. Has amazing lines like, "If I'm not back in 5 minutes, call the Pope." And a guy who does a scat song about Chewbacca.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, oh, don't forget the big, kind of... like, dancing numbers.
Oh, yeah, the musical number at the start, and he gets in a fight with, like, 30 atheists. Like, 30, like, these atheists just show up and we're like, "Hey, Jesus, you may not have heard of us, because we've never spoken, because we're atheists." And then they just start beating him up. And, like, the atheists all come out of one Jeep, like it's some sort of clown car.
I think one of the biggest things that really separates a so bad it's good movie from just a bad movie is pacing. I think pacing is a huge part of it. Because if there's a movie where just kind of nothing happens and it sort of drags on, then you really can't help but pay attention. But in movies like Jesus Christ Vampire Hunter, you know, Yours World, all these other ones like that, there's always something happening. It might be completely ridiculous and low budget and silly, but something's happening, and that's what's important.
Have you guys ever seen the Japanese horror movie House?
No.
No.
Sounds familiar.
But actually, I take it it's not about lupus.
No.
It's never about lupus.
House is what happens when you give a director carte blanche to make any movie he wants, but then take away his budget halfway through. But then he just decides, fuck it, I'm going to make my movie. It is fantastic because it's a horror film about a bunch of Japanese schoolgirls, and they're all named after their most obvious traits. So there's Gorgeous, Professor, Melody, Kung Fu, Mac, short for stomach, Sweet, and Fantasy, who all go off to Gorgeous's aunt's house for the summer. And basically the rest of the film is just the house killing them one by one. But it's so bizarre because they're... because, like I said, the budget was slashed, and he had no money to actually make any of the special effects with. So instead, he just decided to use, because he had been directing advertisements before this. So he just decided to use every single trick he had. So there's like stop motion, there's optical printing, it just gets as bizarre as you possibly can. Like at one point, this girl is playing a piano, and then the piano eats her. From starting at the keys, and it just kind of opens up like a mouth and starts chewing her up, and then it bites down, and all of her arms and legs and head pop off, and then they start dancing on top of the piano, and her fingers are still there because those got chopped off first, and her fingers are just raising up and down, playing the keys independent of her body. It is so weird and so good, and a local theater screened it down here, but. About like a month ago, and I had to plead and beg and drag my friends over, but I assure you, at the end, they were grateful to see it. If you can, get your hands on it. Criterion just released it on DVD, and it is the best night. Like you just get a little sake, just you know, something to get you in the mood, and just have fun with it because it is a fun ass movie. All
right, if we're gonna go to Japan for weird movies, I think I might have you beat.
Ooh.
Executive Koala.
That movie's messed up.
Now, this is about a koala bear who is an executive at a pickle company. And his girlfriend disappeared very mysteriously 5 years ago. And over the course of the film, he realizes that his memories have been repressed, and that he is in fact a horrible psychotic killer koala. At which point he kills his current girlfriend, only to discover that his ex-girlfriend and his girlfriend were the same person, and that they use the power of martial arts resurrection to come back and wreak havoc on his life. Also, he gets sent to Alcatraz after a song and dance courtroom scene.
Fantastic.
Keep in mind that this is live action, not a cartoon.
Yes.
This is...
He's like just a guy in a koala suit.
Koala suit. The rest of the people
and a
are
bunny runs the pickle company. Like, no one comments on the... Like, people talk about how he's fuzzy, but no one comments about how a panda could rise so high in the structure of a pickle company.
Well, that sounds almost like Cromarty High School.
True. Cromarty High also.
Is there anything different about Mechazawa? Yeah, he's got a really hard head. That's not what we meant. Hey, Mechazawa, can you help us out with our VCR? Oh, I'm not good with technology. What?
Well, Cromarty High School also had Freddie Mercury going there.
That's
fair. For some reason.
Oh, wow, he's the guy who did the Calamari Wrestler, too?
Yeah, he's done a bunch of other movies about animals doing stuff.
Oh, fantastic. I always wanted to see that.
Yeah, check out Executive Koala.
Actually, there's another one kind of similar to that. Now, when you throw out the name Miyazaki, you know, people usually think of Spirited Away, Princess Mononoke, all of these classics that, you know.
I know where you're going with this.
Well, if you've heard of the director, it's kind of like Disney in Japan. But then there's one that hasn't gotten too much display in America or Canada. And it's called Pompoko.
Yeah.
Has anyone heard of that?
Yeah. First off, may I just point out that it was not directed by Hayao Miyazaki, but in fact was directed by Isao Takahata.
It was like written and produced by his group, though.
Yeah, it was written by Hayao Miyazaki, but
and it's part of the Studio Ghibli. But anyway, like the movie itself,
yes.
Basically features this bunch of raccoons, tanuki raccoons, who save the day with their giant inflatable tentacles. And
magic.
They can puff them up and fly. I'm not even kidding. It's messed up. And when they anglicize it, they called them pouches. But yes. They're these big, hairy...
They can transform by wrapping them around them. They can stretch them out and use them like trampolines. They actually pull them out from underneath somebody's feet like a rug.
It's baffling. It's just disturbing. But this is like a kids' movie, you know, and it's
there's even a battle scene where they puff them up into gigantic clubs and just start braining each other with their giant testicles.
And it spawned a million AMVs to a certain AC/DC song.
Yep.
Although oddly enough, I'm a little more disturbed by when they're just standing there and they just have the little furry balls than when they have their gigantic malformed sacks.
Well, I think that's the uncanny valley at work. Like once they're sort of bizarre and strange, they're just silly. But when they're normal size, you're like, oh. Those are testicles. That's weird.
The whole movie is just weird.
Yeah. All right, Chrissy, you want to throw us another one?
Well, see, because we started talking about Japanese movies, and then I started thinking about Battle Royale and Battle Royale 2. But, like, Battle Royale is just bad. Like, I don't think it has anything redeeming. But... Oh, okay. So changing countries again. There's a Bollywood movie called Krish. It's like epically long, like all Bollywood movies are. But it's about this guy, Krish, who has superpowers. And he goes around with a mask and he's like saving people and dancing and singing.
Nice.
Oh, it's awesome. And then you find out his dad, who looks exactly like him. Got the superpowers from aliens. But you'd have to watch another epically long prequel to find out all the details.
Oh my gosh.
It's just like, there's all this angst and almost kissing, but no kissing because it's Bollywood and just like going around saving. Oh, it was awesome.
I don't believe in So Bad It's Good, but if I did, it would be Bollywood films. Have you guys seen Indian Wanted?
No,
but I have seen Indian Fight Club, which I will get to.
Indian Wanted is the story of a thief, a part-time thief, part-time, I think he works at a laundromat, or maybe at, like, a car repair. It doesn't really matter. All it is a loosely connected, as most of them are, a loosely connected series of action scenes and semi-enjoyable pop songs. But the action scenes are literally the most over the top battles I've ever seen. Because it's just this one guy who goes into any situation and utterly dominates. You know, the first fight is inside of this warehouse, and it ends with him grabbing a guy and literally embedding his face in a wall made of corrugated metal siding so hard that his face makes an imprint on the other side. At the end of the movie, somebody tosses a Molotov cocktail on him, and he just brushes it off. It is incredibly over the top and fantastic. Look it up on YouTube because it is well worth your time.
Now, Indian Fight Club is quite amazing in that it takes everything that Fight Club is about and then just filters it through India, and it's now completely the opposite. Okay, so Indian Fight Club starts off with these four guys who get fired from their jobs almost at the same time, only to realize that they could make a whole lot of money by setting up a place where people can fight and then won't get busted by the cops. And, you know, they do the rules scene, except the rules are completely backwards, where in the original Fight Club is about, you know, expressing your manliness and your primal side and eschewing all forms of civilization. Here it's about having a real reason to fight and being fair about it and, like, not, and all sorts of other pointless shit. About halfway through the movie, they stop, they close down Fight Club, and they start up a nightclub in another city, and then this drug runner's like, I need that nightclub because they're on the border, and that's the only way I can smuggle drugs through there. So I must force them out. So he gets this hitman named Sandy, which is the most intimidating hitman name ever. And he's got, like, because it's Bollywood, everything's musical. And Sandy, whenever he's on screen, he's got, like, the space monks doing, like, you know, Koan and Anasazi after him. And then it comes down to this big climactic fight scene, and all throughout, the one most awesome fighter from the Fight Club guys has a team of rappers that always start up when he does something badass, and he has wire foo powers for some reason. And I was so hoping that those two guys would fight, and then their backup singers would, like, have to fight for dominance over the soundtrack. And instead, they just tried to kill him with a forklift, at which point I started singing about...
He tried to kill him with a forklift.
Yes, exactly. But it's, like, ridiculously long, but it's so amusing, and that it manages to have the name Fight Club and be so completely opposite of what Fight Club is. Like, people complain about, like, the Transformers movie being not about what Transformers is, but this is literally backwards.
You know, the Transformers movies were so bad they were good.
No, they were just so bad they were bad.
Oh, come on. You can't say you didn't enjoy robots punching each other.
Well, yeah, but there was also the racism and the homophobia. And the toilet humor.
And
the racism.
The racism and the homophobia was like your grandpa who's adorable and befuddled, and he doesn't know what he's saying, and so you just kind of go, oh, grandpa, just tell me more stories about when you were a robot and fought things. Maybe not so much. Okay, maybe it's like a mentally handicapped child who is attracted easily by shiny things and asks why that one man is all covered with soot.
Oh.
No. And that was not, in fact, me.
I think there's one very specific genre of so bad it's good movies that I don't know how we've overlooked it for so long. Arnie movies.
Oh.
Yeah.
See, the problem is that half of 80s action movies claim to be satirizing other 80s action movies.
Yeah.
Like that's the problem with a lot of these movies, is you'll hear creators go, no, that was satire. Like, the guys who made Space Mutiny claim it was a satire, and I'm like, no, it wasn't. You don't steal stock footage from Battlestar Galactica and claim you're a satire. No.
Yeah, it's not just action movies, though, either. I mean, like, say what you want. I love Jingle All the Way. Basically anything with Ernie. It could be as stupid as anything, but I love it.
That said, Commando is like the Arnie movie to end all Arnie movies. Like, it's everything that Arnie does, like, just dialed up to past 11.
Yeah, he just walks around and shoots people with a machine gun and makes puns about it for about an hour and a half. Brilliant.
Oh, Kindergarten Cop. That, oh, love that movie.
Bring the toy back to the carpet.
I think Kindergarten Cop might be his most quotable movie.
Yeah.
All the weird ones are in there. You know, the non-sequiturs.
Like when you're doing the Arnie soundboard to call up tech support and make fun of them, most of those are from Kindergarten Cop. Mm. I'm a cop, you idiot!
Hey, kind of another Arnie movie, this one on the side. Would you guys consider Batman and Robin to be so bad it's good?
Batman Forever, yes. Batman and Robin, no.
No.
It's insufferably bad. Like, the thing is, I laugh just to prevent myself from crying.
Like, the problem is that a so bad it's good movie needs to be inherently enjoyable, but for the reason not initially intended, you know? Mm-hmm. Or at least for most of them, like for the ones that are intentionally bad, I guess then it's more sort of riffing off of the traditional so bad it's good. But yeah, no. Although one of my friends did a re-edit of Batman and Robin called Batman and Robin De-Assified, in which he cut out every single shot with an ass shot, and it ended up being only 45 minutes long and actually pretty good.
That's bizarre. Like, I find it interesting that's a correlation, that you just cut out anything with a butt shot and then the movie's better.
I think he also cut out anything with visible and prominent bat nipples.
Oh, not the bat nipples.
Those were just rough.
Now, if he could shoot them out and they would, like, embed into concrete and he could swing by them, that would have been cool. Well, you guys don't want grappling nipples? I think that this is an unexplored gadget in Batman's retinue.
Well, you know what? His hands are full a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Like, it's gotta be tough on the shoulder when you're using the gun and carrying your unconscious love interest out of a burning building.
Exactly.
If he had nipples, he could use both hands for the girl.
Or you could, and then you could have that one scene where the bad guys take him prisoner and they tie his hands behind his back and they're like, "What are you gonna do now, Batman?" And he says, "I don't know. You guys got any sort of good one-liner for firing out metal prongs from your nipples?"
I don't think I've got a good one-liner for that one.
I don't think the English language is really prepared to do a commentary in that sort of situation. But were it, he would say that, and then, pshoo, they would fire out like the temperature dropped 50 degrees, and just sort of knock the henchman unconscious. And then he could aim it upwards, and then rappel up to the ceiling, all by his massive heaving chest.
I don't know what to do with this.
If Catwoman in the Catwoman movie had action nipples, I think it would have been a much better film.
There were a lot of things that would have made the Catwoman movie better. Like not making a Catwoman movie.
This is fair.
That movie does not need to exist.
See, that's another genre we haven't tapped, are terrible superhero movies. Like, come on, Puma Man.
Puma Man?
Puma Man was made in Mexico on no budget.
I don't think
and his sidekick was way more awesome.
I don't think that movies covered by MST3K count, because MST3K has already made them good.
Yeah. That is true. That is very true. Now I'm trying to think of a superhero movie I enjoyed in spite of it. Like, the Ghost Rider movie had Nick Cage, which is usually a sign of enjoyable terribleness.
Yeah.
But the Ghost Rider movie was mostly boring, except for that one scene.
Yeah, the biggest blue ball scene ever.
I know, it's like, let's ride! And you think, yeah! Sam Elliott and Nick Cage are gonna kick ass, and then he just rides the horse and the motorcycle, and then it stops, and I'm like, why would you stop?
It's like,
Sam Elliott.
Well, you're gonna go on from here, I'll be back in my trailer, and he rides off. And you're like, no!
Movies need more Sam Elliott.
Boy, this is true.
Boy,
this is so very true. Like, Sam Elliott was only in, like, 5 minutes of Thank You for Smoking, and those were, like, the really awesome 5 minutes.
Whoa. Are you talking shit about my Thank You for Smoking?
No, like, I love that movie.
All right.
But the best 5 minutes are the ones with Sam Elliott.
This is fair.
Just to make sure here, Sam Elliott's the stranger from The Big Lebowski, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
Like, I don't even know if he had a movie career before he became old and awesome, but I don't think I want to think of him as a young person. Because in my head, he's always going to be a grizzled old cowboy.
Jumping back just a moment to Nick Cage there, has anybody seen Vampire's Kiss? I think that's
no.
The name of it. Oh, so it was a movie made back in, I think, the late 80s or early 90s, something like that. It was when Nick Cage was still just kind of on the up and up, a little before Face Off, which is its own.
Is there an up and up with Nick Cage?
I don't know. Maybe it was kind of like an up and up and then down again. Who knows what? But anyway.
Nick Cage is just everywhere.
He's all over the place, to be honest. Yeah, he's done some real crap and some real gold, too. Now, this movie, I don't know whether it's good or bad or what, but it basically, you've got this guy whose mind starts going at part of it, where he starts believing that he's a vampire. He's not a vampire, but he believes he's a vampire. So what you end up seeing is this, '80s businessman jumping around yelling, "I'm a vampire! I'm a vampire!" And, you know, biting people and, you know, going to fancy parties and saying, "Well, I'd really like to, but I'm sorry, I'm a vampire." It's just baffling, but it's hilarious. And of course it's got the typical Nick Cage insane rambling and, you know, breaking stuff scene.
You ever wanted to see what it was like when Nicolas Cage larks?
I would totally invite Nicolas Cage to LARP. Then again, I also want to start a hunter LARP that just shows up in the middle of vampire LARPs and shoots them all with Nerf guns and leaves. Like, it wouldn't even be like, I think I should contact some vampire LARPers and it's like, okay, I've got like 6 friends and we want to start doing a hunter thing. But we just want to bust up your shit. It's like, we'd pretend that we did plot other days, but we'd mostly just go to cons and mess up the vampire LARPers.
Don't the, what's the LARP group that usually comes to Anime North?
Is it Epoch? I don't know.
I can't remember. They're always where, Nomenichi is.
Yeah, they're in that exile, they're in the exiled hotel across the bridge with the yaoi people.
Yeah.
You know LARPers are second-class citizens at the con when their booth is next to the all-night yaoi room.
Okay, so apparently the internet's telling me that Sam Elliott, his first movie role was as card player number 2 in Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Alright, so...
Nice way to start out.
It's a good way to start.
And he was also in an episode of Hawaii Five-0 in the 70s.
I can't see him in Hawaii Five-0. I just can't do it.
I keep seeing him in that, like, the cowboy hat. And
like he'd just be this old cowboy. and there'd be Dano, and I'd be like, what the hell?
They needed a cowboy.
Maybe they did. Speaking of, there's a great DVD set that just collects a bunch of old Western TV shows where Trek actors showed up before they went into Trek. So you can see, like, Nimoy play an Indian in 3 different TV series.
Yes!
Yeah, what makes it really funny is when you see, obviously, white people playing Native Americans.
Oh, what was that one show where all the Indians were played by Jews?
Oh, that was Blazing Saddles, man.
No. There was a TV show that did it beforehand, and like one of the Indians was Colonel Klinger from MASH. Hmm.
That's strange. I don't think I've ever heard of this.
Let me look it up, because it was a good show. I caught it once or twice. Let's see now. Jamie Farr. Who was a part of? Oh, never mind.
Oh.
I can't read things fast enough.
All right.
Do you guys have any So Bad It's Good animated movies?
Oh, well, there's a ton of, like, low-budget Korean things that are great, like,
Space Thunder Kids.
Space Thunder Kids.
Yeah.
Or that weird, like, South Korean knockoff of Tron.
Well, that was Space Thunder Kids. They just turned into Tron in about, like, you know, three-quarters of the way through.
Oh, right, because Space Thunder Kids was three different movies.
They just kind of spliced
tradition
it together, and
of
you have no
1980s
idea who the
characters. Animation localization.
It's really actually hard to watch Space Thunder Kids. I've tried. I wasn't able to make it through. But you just have these random segments of animation stitched together. You'll be thinking like, okay, so who's this? Who's that? What are they talking about? And
everyone is named Ken.
Everyone's named Ken. They have all these like space battles that are just blatantly ripping off other Gundam and mecha series. But probably, yeah, the most hilarious part is where you think, oh, okay, so it looks like they're kind of ripping off Tron here. You know, they've got sort of similar costumes. And then, boom, out come the light discs, you know? And it's complete ripoff. It's hilarious.
Actually, if you want bad, so bad as good animation, you have to watch MD Geist.
What's that?
Okay, MD Geist was this, it came out during the 1980s OVA boom, where pretty much any animator could get a budget and put it right on a VHS, and as long as it had tits and guts, it would sell well and then get exported to America. And MD Geist was about this super soldier program and this post-apocalyptic future, and the writing made no sense. And it was about this guy just being badass and stupid and saying really bizarre things until it came to the final fight. And it's like, you know, you'd be 40, the plot slowly builds for the first bit, and then at the end it's like, this dude in this crazy power armor shows up, it's like, I am the evil overlord, let us kung fu fight, and then they kung fu fight.
that almost.
And then there was a sequel which was somehow worse.
I just wish I could remember the name of this one anime movie. It was, you know, a straight to VHS. I think it was an OVA. It's just this group of people on a spaceship. I watched this thing at Anime North. It's this group in a spaceship. About 15 of the first minutes of the movie, so the first 15 minutes, it's just them running through the ship while it plays this music. And they just keep running down the hallway. And then another shot of them running down a different hallway and more running. And you just start thinking, like, is this ever going to go anywhere? And it never does. They just
down the hallway, that's where it goes.
They, you know, start up the spaceship, and then the spaceship starts moving. And they never really tell you what they're doing or why they're doing it. But the whole movie is just this team of kids running around a spaceship. And then softly cruising through space. It's so boring.
David, do you have another bad animated movie? Because I've got one to suggest.
Well, this might piss some people off, but I've always thought that The Last Unicorn was so bad it was good.
I think the dub more so than, like, the video's fine. It's the dub that makes it so bad it's good.
My favorite part is just when that damn unicorn turns into a, transforms into a girl, and then it just cuts to this and everybody's like, what just happened? They find her, and there's a naked girl sitting in the middle of a forest just shaking her head back and forth saying, I'm a unicorn! I'm a unicorn! That has stuck with me,
And it's Angela Lansbury doing the voice.
Yeah. I'm a unicorn. Everything about that character is just the right shade of awkward. In fact, she has that song, Now That I'm a Woman.
Back up. It was Mia Farrow that was the voice of Amalthea.
Yeah. It was Mia Farrow and Jeff Bridges.
Yeah, and Angela Lansbury was the witch.
Okay.
Yeah.
Breaking up the unicorn love, I see.
Yeah.
I just remember.
Okay. I think Angela Lansbury was the only name that was actually on the box, despite the fact that I think Christopher Lee played the bad guy.
Yeah. I don't know, like, the music was so bad, it was good.
Oh, geez, yeah.
America?
Mm-hmm. Also bad for the music by the same company, the Hobbit anime?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Page. I was gonna say pretty much anything that's even remotely associated with Ralph Bakshi.
Yeah, Rankin-Bass.
Have you heard of him, no?
Yeah.
So, Hobbit anime, animated Hobbit, The Lord of the Rings, Wizards... Fritz the Cat, any of those? They're
Return of the King. Oh, that had some terrible music.
You know what I really do want to see though? Fire and Ice. Fire and Ice looks like it's a because it was a co-production of Ralph Bakshi and Frank Frazetta. Ooh. So it's basically just a moving Frank Frazetta painting. I really want to see it.
Okay, so probably out of all of them though. I actually did enjoy Wizards. You know,
Wizards has this really neat idea.
It's a really neat idea.
Oh god,
the animation was interesting. The story
was all rotoscoped.
So anyway, there's like a good wizard, kind of good, and a bad wizard, and the bad wizard is using Nazi propaganda to teach his army how to be evil. And it really goes nowhere, but it's pretty epic to watch just for the animation alone. Fritz the Cat is just dirty.
Oh yeah, it's awful.
Well, Fritz the Cat was just dirty for the sake of being dirty.
Yeah, it was
let's
the first
be offensive as we can.
Cartoon. It was entertaining to watch, but it was kind of dirty and made you feel weird.
There's a theater that shows Fritz the Cat like weekly here. It's like weird art house place.
That's odd.
Yeah, they also do a double bill of Nosferatu and Metropolis.
Metropolis was hard to watch. I liked it, but it was hard to watch. Hard to get through.
I'm trying to think of other just movies I have watched for the sake of making fun of them.
The Wizard.
That movie's just bad. That's not even a movie. That's a commercial for Nintendo.
I liked it as a kid though, because it had Nintendo in it.
I always wanted to go into an arcade and be able to play like Nintendo games on a big arcade machine.
Mm-hmm.
And you also wanted a power glove that wasn't useless.
I still want a power glove.
Oh no, you don't.
Yes, I do.
They're really, really bad. They're hard to use. I've used it. I've worn the power. I've held the power in my hand, and I didn't want it.
I think you had to wash your hand.
Yeah, just to get the power off it. It is gross.
The power was sticky.
Icky sticky power.
Feels all powery.
Okay, so right now I'm watching a video sent by David about the Fire and Ice movie, and this animation is awesome. I don't know what's going on, but I heartily recommend this to everyone. It's called Fire and Ice. Yeah, it must be by the guys who did, like, the Hobbit movie. It's ridiculous.
See, and getting off topic to a movie that didn't get made that would have been bad was that we almost got a Beatles-produced Lord of the Rings movie.
What?
Like the Beatles? Yeah, the Beatles were going to...
Storm like, Mordor?
Yeah. Yes and no, because I think... who was going to play what? I'm trying to remember who was what, but I think, like, Ringo was going to be Aragorn and...
What?
Like,
what? That's not going to
happen. And, like, John was going to be Gollum.
Huh? No, that doesn't make... No.
Yeah, no, it was messed up. Like, Paul was going to be Gandalf and...
What?
John was going to be...
John is easily the most magical of them.
Yeah. I know. And Ringo is obviously Sam. Like, he was always the Sam.
And
you said earlier that Ringo was Aragorn.
Or no, but Ringo is so the perfect person to play Sam.
Yeah.
Yeah. I could see
if
Ringo
you had
Sam.
To pick a Beatle.
Or actually, Ringo could be, Ringo would make a good Frodo, if only because then he could sing, I get by with a little help from my friends.
True. Ringo might also make a good Faramir.
Yeah, because
he's
yeah.
the one that gets ignored.
Well, the guy who played Faramir did share a common nose.
Yeah.
Faramir.
But you just have to think about how bad this movie would have been, because it would have been like, is it secret? Is it safe? The text is in the text is in the black speech, which I won't dare repeat here, but in Elvish it reads, one ring to rule them all.
For all four of them are Gandalf, and they all just kind of talk in sequence. One ring to bind them.
Or what? They'd have to have
crossover
other,
between Lord of the Rings and the Yellow Submarine. So then, like, all the orcs are blue meanies. We are all a part of the Fellowship of the Rings. The Fellowship of the Ring. The Fellowship of the Ring. Come on, everybody!
No. I think we've gone to far too silly a place.
Well, for the Yellow Submarine movie, I've never actually watched it.
It's so bad, it's good.
Did you guys say it's so good, it's good, or...?
Yeah. It's inventive.
It's weird.
It's weird. It's pretty good.
Like, it definitely captures the spirit of the times.
Ah.
The spirit of the times being massive drug use.
Yes.
And really good music.
Yeah.
That's good.
It's alright if you can stomach, you know, late 60s English animation.
I've got a hole in my pocket.
Oh.
Hmm. Thinking about English animation there. Terry Gilliam has been behind some so bad it's good movies.
No, Terry Gilliam's the one American.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, cool. He was the one American.
Well, I thought he did the animation for the Monty Python shows.
Yeah, and he was the one American.
Oh, okay. Well, he was American, but he was in charge of what I think of as British animation. That's goofy. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Well, Terry Gilliam made some very weird movies.
I advise against Brazil.
Like, what?
That was supposed to be his masterpiece. It was just long and stupid.
It was awesome! It's beautiful!
It was just like, nothing happened. It was just like, what is going on?
When it looks that good, nothing needs to happen.
But the characters themselves weren't interesting enough to support a plot. You know?
Would you tell a rose to go and do something? You're boring me. No, you would enjoy.
I wouldn't tell a rose to do something. But I mean, like, this one didn't have any roses. It was just like garbage flowers. You know those ones that are like, you know, those white ones that grow on a tree and smell like poo.
Would a garbage flower by any other name smell as sweet?
Well, I'm sure they have a real name, but they still smelled lame.
They smelled gross. And anyway, that movie it was just bad. I usually like those, you know, kind of out there movies, but it was good.
Another movie that those guys put out, Jabberwocky. I can't remember if it has the Y at the end. That was awful. Because it's like, from the creators of Monty Python, another medieval fun-filled romp. It's mostly just wandering around the dank, depressing, dark moors of England, sort of making political commentary without all the fun.
I don't think. God damn it, John Cleese was in on that, because John Cleese always says if you try and make a funny movie that makes a political statement, you end up with shite. But if you start a sketch where a guy walks into a chemist, you might be onto something.
I like it. Do you like Time Bandits? Come on, you must love Time Bandits.
Time Bandits had midgets. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. All right. As long as we're in agreement with Time Bandits, I can still respect you.
All right. Chrissy, you've been quiet. Say something.
I haven't seen Time Bandits.
Oh.
Go see Time Bandits.
Okay, with what time?
I don't know.
Did they steal it from you?
Oh, I know. Field trip. Like, all right, kids, let's go watch Time Bandits.
Hey, you've got end of the year stuff. You're totally allowed to do the last class of the day. We're just watching Time Bandits.
Well, I definitely on the Mythbusters. All right, guys, today we're watching Mythbusters. I was also thinking about, oh, shit, what was that movie I was thinking of? That was so bad, it was good. Oh, well, Drive Angry, Nick Cage. Oh. It was actually, like, it didn't try to be something that it wasn't. It was just like, hey, we're about killing things and driving really cool muscle cars. And also, Nicolas Cage looks freaky ugly at some points because his eye got shot out. And, like, his character's name is John Milton, and he drives a muscle car out of hell. It's like, wow. And the actor that plays Charlie in the Twilight movies is the, like, the big bad in the movie. It's just odd. And it would be really funny if it got crossed over with Ghost Rider.
They are doing a second one. Anything is possible. Actually, speaking of muscle cars and explosions, watch either version of Death Race. Because the original Death Race East 2000 is just over-the-top nuts and explosions and bad cheesy special effects. And the most recent one just has Jason Statham. And he's always doing his Jason Statham thing where he's like, "Hi, I'm British and kind of hardcore. Listen to me talk. My voice sounds weird." And then
Jason Statham was in recently. He was the voice
of that awful Uwe Boll movie
in Romeo and Juliet.
That is an odd turn for him,
isn't it? I know that you guys follow this Spoonie. There's another reviewer called The Cinema Snob.
Yeah,
and he has publicly proclaimed that he will see anything that Jason Statham is in. And he found out that Jason Statham was, in fact, the lead in Romeo and Juliet. He regretted it his proclamation instantly, but to his credit, followed through and watched the whole damn thing.
Did you watch Romeo and Juliet?
God, no! I swear no fealty to Statham.
But aren't you required to watch animation to study?
Good animation! Good
No,
animation.
You learn. You have to learn from bad animation.
I get enough of that in class, thank you very much.
Oh, anything as bad as that one proposal you found in the printer?
Oh man, that was delightful.
Describe.
Oh god, what was it?
Oh, I think I've still got the file. I keep meaning to release it as a bonus episode at some point. Where we mock the proposal and then we talk about One Piece for 5 minutes.
That sounds solid.
Is it like a crossover or something?
It was this pilot pitch that one of his fellow students had written that he just found in a printer. And it was like this really lame knockoff of Bleach.
Yeah.
Except it was also a comedy.
Yeah. Oh, it was so bad.
Like,
oh my god. The guy had like 7 swords because that's cool. And gray hair. Oh man, it was like you could just go down the Mary Sue checklist and just go, yep. You scored a full marks. Your license for Mary Sue has been reinstated. What was thinking? It's not Sin City. It was the movie after that Frank Miller directed.
The Spirit.
Oh,
The Spirit. That is so bad. It's good.
Sam Jackson's good at picking those. Like when he decides to go nuts, he picks good movies. Because Snakes on a Plane was equally awesome. And I like that Sam Jackson insisted that Snakes on a Plane be crazy. Like they tried to change the title and he was like, "No, I signed on this for Snakes on a Plane."
Whoa.
The devil was that?
Sorry, that was me. I'm trying to transcode a video to show in class tomorrow.
Ooh, what's the video?
It's this really old school style, old school style science safety video, and it's all done up kind of like Degrassi, but not the new Degrassi with that used to have Drake in it, but like the old school Degrassi Junior High.
Oh, you Canadians with your Degrassi High.
Yeah.
And our poutine.
So, would you say that it's good, bad, or...
It's bad.
It's good.
It's chemistry safety videos, man.
Yeah.
You should swap it out for one class and just play an episode of Look Around You.
Look around you.
Oh, I tried to show them an episode of Captain Planet one day, and they're just like, no. No.
What? Children, please.
See, no, you have to be hip and with it and show them one of the really preachy episodes of Power Rangers Wild Force.
Oh,
No, you need to show them the Toxic Avengers.
Oh, Toxic Avenger.
Well, we're moving on to chemistry now, so they get to watch this so bad that it's just bad video. But
you know,
it could always
so
be worse. Like, it could always have to just read from the textbook.
You know what's, I think they still have it streaming on Netflix, is most of Beakman's World.
That would be awesome.
Beakman was way cooler than Bill Nye.
Way cool. Just Lester the Rat was like the best character ever. Yeah, all of it. Four seasons worth.
There was one so bad educational video that basically all Canadian kids can associate with. Have you guys suffered through Télé-Français?
Oh, Télé-Français! yeah! it's about a pineapple that teaches you French verbs.
And don't forget about les squelettes and how they rock out. Yeah, it's really terrible, but it was like, you know, basically every kid in French class growing up has watched at least one Télé-Français video. It's, you know, really cheesy puppets.
Those were like the best days ever in French class when we got to watch Télé-Français.
We can all still sing the song, you like. maybe it was just the context. I went back and watched them again just a little while ago for Kish value. And it hadn't aged well.
Yeah, Canada's really weird about a lot of things.
Well, I was visiting a friend in the States, and we were watching some Unskippable on The Escapist, and the guys that do it are Canadian, and they're like, "Stay alert,
stay safe."
Oh God, those PSAs with the rabbits!
So I started laughing, and my friend's like, "What? Well, what? It's I don't get it." So I like found all the old PSAs on YouTube, and I was showing them to her, and she was like, "Wow."
I'm good.
Yeah, no, Canadian PSAs are messed up. Like, show some people some Heritage Minutes, and they'll freak out. Or what was the other one? The North American House Hippo video was epic.
That was just cool.
That was
like weird. It's this video explaining to kids that you shouldn't believe advertising. So it starts off with like this little mini documentary about tiny hippos that live in your closet.
Oh my God, that's fantastic!
Like it makes its nest out of dryer lint and your lost mittens and eats the crumbs from peanut butter on toast.
Oh, that's such a heartless lie to tell poor impressionable children.
And then it stops, and it's like, and the screen sort of fades to black and white. And it's like, looks believable, doesn't it? But it's not true.
Oh.
Don't believe everything.
Be careful about what you listen to on TV.
In America, kids have little hippopotamuses that live in their closet. They're called American children. You know what you Canadians do have that's really awesome? Besides Red Green?
Red Green is cool.
What you guys have is the National Film Board of Canada. And
who will fund anything.
Oh my God, yes. But they will also fund anything. And I don't know. What's his name? Norm McLaren?
Yeah.
That guy is my hero. Oh my God. Neighbors is such a good film. And his ballet stuff? Impeccable! Impeccable! The most beautiful thing ever put on film. I don't care. And Ryan is a fantastic documentary. Did you ever see that?
I don't think I have.
Oh, it's really good. It's an animated documentary about a guy, about an animator talking to another animator. So like all the conversations are these two actual people talking to one another. But then the actual video of them interacting is 3D animation. And what's great is that this one animator, or Ryan, the subject, he had done a lot of drugs late in life and gotten into alcohol, and he had kind of just fallen to pieces. And so His model in Maya is literally falling to pieces as he's talking. Like, you can see his synapses firing inside of his brain, and like half of his face is gone. And like when he starts feeling sad, his body actually starts melting a little, and when he gets happy, parts of him start knitting back together. It's really, really good. It's one of my favorite films ever. Okay. Doing your own cultural history. Gosh.
Yeah, I know. See, the thing about Canada is that if you want to succeed, you go to America. And if you just want to be weird and get government funding for nothing, you stay here.
Yeah,
so Canada's developed this reputation in the film world for making these odd, quirky movies. So the people who want to make quirky movies just stick around.
Yeah, my favorite professor down here at SCED was Canadian. And my favorite comedians on Whose Line Is It Anyway?
See, Colin Mochrie, he got a job up here now. He's doing This Hour Has 22 Minutes and doing it well. This Hour Has 22 Minutes is like our daily show.
Yeah, that's one thing that Canada has had over America for a long time. Satire, it's just, you know, it's Canadian humor.
And I will give you one cop show, because Flashpoint is my favorite. But that's it. You're not getting any more.
So Due South doesn't count?
No.
How about a sitcom about a gas station?
No.
Corner Gas rules.
I still laugh at that, man. I was watching a clip about how Oscar was trying to get a part-time job, and he was doing all these like little kid jobs, like delivering the paper and selling cookies door to door. That's still funny.
Oh, the episode when they're trying to come up with like a giant thing to get people to come to Dog River.
Yeah. So they make the giant hoe.
Yeah. The giant dirty hoe. Oh.
The world's biggest dirty hoe.
Listening to you guys talk, it's like listening to people from an alternate universe talk.
But I think we've wandered off topic. Does anyone have any more good bad movies to throw out there? Or are we just going to call this a night?
It's probably a good time to cut her off.
And on that note, let's call it a night.
Okay.
Bye.
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 I thought they smelled bad on the outside.
I thought they smelled bad on the outside. Released under a Creative Commons license. Check out our website at sbopodcast.blogspot.com. Check us out on Twitter at sbopodcast or our Facebook page at I Thought They Smelled Bad on the Outside. Or kick me an email at sbopodcast@gmail.com.